each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. So good to be here again. I'm Father Tom Coyes. Today's Wednesday again. The weeks go by fast, don't they? Years are pile up. Years go by fast, too, but I think weeks just zip right by.
Yeah. You know?
Sometimes hours are slower than weeks, it seems like.
Sure.
Father Tom.
Oh, no!
That's the sad truth of the existence of our mortal coil we live in. And you're here on Winds of Change, where we discuss theology in connection with philosophy and sometimes politics and many times history, psychology, and the inner workings of the heart and the mind and the soul. That sort of sums it up, doesn't it, Tony?
That's good.
This is your Catholic headquarters. We're going to try to tackle a topic that we've touched on before, again, with a little bit of help from a wonderful guest that we have with us. I'm tempted to... Jeff Gardner, are you there? And you are with an organization called Friends of Nineveh. Is that it? Oh, hello. I'm sorry. Maybe we'll get him in. I was tempted to try to touch on one thing that's on my chest. I'm bringing something into my... I'm bringing something into the studio here because I just came from a penance service. And before we get to the deep... challenge, I got to get something off my chest. And then we'll get to the Middle East. But first, I want to get something about confessions. You know, we do confessions. And I don't know. There's something bugging me about the way we're trying to teach children. And it particularly has to do with anonymity. I was at a Catholic school helping out with confessions. And I was told specifically that... children do not go behind the screen. Everyone must go face to face.
Oh,
and I'm kind of an open guy. I'm not against face to face, but I'm very attuned to the fact that as a confessor, sometimes you like anonymity, mm-hmm. And it seems like the way we're teaching our kids, we're just completely destroying the sense of anonymity in confession by forcing them to go face to face. If you have a choice and you sit down, fine. But I think, and especially children should be known that it is an option, not that you don't do it that way.
It's something when you're forced. I had that same experience where it was just one of those things that the priest was doing, and I just did not feel comfortable at all.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable as a priest doing it. I feel more comfortable if there's that anonymity, at least if the person wants it. If the person doesn't and chooses to sit down, then that's certainly fine. But even in then, you know, I'm sometimes suspicious. I'd rather them use the screen because, it limits a little the chit-chat that happens sometimes. And when you have a crowd, you want to move people along and you want to have the essence of the sacrament and it pushes it away from spiritual direction in that way. But anyways, I got that off my chest. Well, maybe we could do that we need an hour to discuss that.
To come back to that.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe our technical issues are going here. Jeff Gardner, you are you there with us?
I am here.
Very good. How about that? I knew we'd pull it off. We are a professional radio station here, and I think all the people who tune into it expect this kind of professionalism from Winds of Change. God bless you for all our wonderful listeners, but and God bless you, Jeff, for coming in or being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. And I think the wait was well worth it, considering what you discussed. I was a principal of a Catholic high school for a time, and I too was never quite satisfied with forcing the face to face and you know, because I mean, look, human failings are human failings, and
yeah,
we've done something that we're ashamed of. Having that anonymity, looking forward to the availability of anonymity, is sometimes the little nudge or the encouragement that we need to get us into the confessional, you know,
and be more honest. And,
yeah.
And our kids are being trained that that's a bad thing.
And you know, we know the elephant in the room that we're all stepping around, and that is, you know, that we're sometimes I wonder if we're living in a time in which you know, we're able to govern our lives both spiritually and temporally by the rule of law or the rule of lawyers. And,
yeah.
And so, yeah, let's just call a spoon a spoon. But anyway,
there you go.
Thank you.
There you go.
The delay was just fine. No problem.
And one more thing, I remember, as a penitent, not only did I work when the priest saw my face, he would know who I am. I worried about him recognizing my voice. You know?
Yeah,
you know, it's not.
How many out there have used poorly, you know, articulated accents, no matter how well intended?
That's right. I used to put on fake nose and a mustache when I went into confession. No, but I just had to get them off my chest because I just coming from. Anywho, but it is a serious topic, but we're here. We got you here, Jeff, because there's another serious topic the trouble in the Middle East, especially with Christians, but the incredible disruption, the incredible violence that this ISIS, this radical jihad that's being carried out. It's kind of like on the tweet as I sent out this morning for those who are on my little tweet message. I said the war in Iraq. It is a war, but it's kind of I was going to write down. I think I forgot. I did try to keep it simple, but I wanted to say almost like an ignored war, or a war that's being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you give us a little introduction? What would you like to start with? What would you like to tell our listeners first?
We'll go from there. Well, you know, I think you've set the tone quite well, Father, because it is ignored. I mean, in part, again, you know, you always should start from a position of honesty. You know, America, we as a country and a people, we've never done well with prolonged conflicts. I mean, many people don't know that, especially those who weren't alive at the time, that the Second World War, as the war in the Pacific dragged on, became very wearying for the people of this country. They were very tired. And there was a significant amount of, let's just get it over with and get out, and pressures to settle with Imperial Japan on their terms. And that was only the 4 years. So, you know, having a drawn-out 10-year involvement in Iraq has tainted how people look at the region.
Mm-hmm.
I often hear from people a sort of a dismissive fatalism. They say, you know, something that goes usually like this. Well, those people, this is sort of objectifying, those people over there have always been like that, meaning, you know, violent and non-comprehensible to us. And therefore, why do we get involved? Just let them do what they do. Well, I understand where these feelings are coming from, but from
battle
a civil
fatigue.
But from a civil and especially a spiritual, a Catholic perspective, we can't, you know, we can't do that. I mean, being the shining city on the hill is not about ourselves. This is not about self-aggrandizement, and it takes a lot of just elbow grease to run a city. and to keep the light burning, you know, all the time. It takes a lot of personal fortitude to be the salt of the earth. And so when we are always called to right wrongs and to be the light to people's, you know, the path to their feet. And this means our brothers and sisters in Christ, and this means our you know, our brothers and sisters who are under the sway of Islam. And so we really have to fortify ourselves spiritually. We have to fortify ourselves politically to get at this. And one of the ways that we have not done this, and I understand where the fatigue has come from, is there has simply not been an articulated and sensible plan that aims at a terminus. You know, we need the humanitarian aid. We need the corporal works of mercy. But to give someone a blanket and a bag of rice and kerosene for their heater, who has had everything stolen from them, their home, their town, their church, their business, you know, the entire fabric of their material life pulled out from underneath them, and they're living in an unfinished concrete building as a foreigner in their own country, to say, okay, now we got you covered with the food and the water and the fuel, and we know it's cold, but, you know, stay warmer with this blanket. That's not enough. That's not enough. That
are you driving at trying to get to the root?
Absolutely.
The root being jihadism.
Well,
or is it
how part, yes. The part of the root is jihadism. Part of the root, you know, radix, we take from the Latin, is the establishment first of a safe haven and then of a province for Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East. You know, I've had the great opportunity to work in humanitarian media. That's what I do all over the planet. I've been to Africa and the Caribbean and Asia and the Middle East and up through North America. And I'll tell you, especially...
Do you pray every day, Jeff? You need to pray three times a day or more, I'd say,
well,
if you're involved in all that.
I do pray every day. I'll take that advice to make it thrice daily, because it is it's a physically demanding occupation spiritually. And, you know, somebody asked me once, what was the one thing that I didn't expect about the sort of work as I was getting into it? And I said, you know, I didn't expect the psychological and spiritual toll that was going to take on me. And so I have a spiritual advisor, and I have a good counselor. You know, and I'm not ashamed to say that. I go to some of the dark, nasty places of the world where I just, you know, that the invitation, the temptation to despair.
You know, it reminds me of the spiritual dilemmas that I find just regular police officers in a big city go through.
Yes.
There's a lot of spiritual angst and family problems and marriage problems.
Yes, yeah.
With police officers and what.
Yeah, and you go to some of these areas and you think, you know, you couldn't clean this up with the world's biggest fire hose. I mean, short of the second coming, you know, how, Lord, am I going to fix this? And I work a lot with religious, you know, priests and brothers and sisters, and I sometimes ask them. I said, do you ever despair? And they say, oh, of course. But, you know, then I remind myself that it's not I that is doing this work. I am merely the instrument.
Can you catch us up a little bit on what's going on now? What's some of the latest news, you know, because we've been...
Sure. So, you know, to sort of pick up there where I left off on my tangent, apologies. The solution for the problems in Iraq, the Middle East, is a province, a safe haven for religious and ethnic minorities. And it's been the necessary solution for a long time. Merely relieving the symptom does that, relieves the symptom. It doesn't relieve the problem. And here's the problem.
It sounds like you're like what Israel is for Jewish people.
Absolutely.
But they don't have much peace either. But at least it's a start. It's something.
Do. You know, it is a start. And so here's what's going on. You know, back in 2014 in the summer, when the so-called Islamic State burst out of Syria, pushed through northern Iraq, you know, nobody knew how far they were going to go in their territorial conquests. And they got about to the halfway point of that country from east to west and about halfway from north to south.
Okay.
And the battle lines settled in. They you know, Iraq is an enormous, it's about the size of Texas, but it's just this big, expansive area with open desert and high mountains in between cities and small villages.
And, you know, so forgive me, Jeff, for asking this maybe a dumb question or so, but what I hear that on the news. When ISIS comes and takes over or, you know, takes territory, what exactly does that mean? What do they do they go in and kill the mayor or, you know, or take over the police department? If many of them don't have police departments or I don't know. What, is it, what does it mean practically?
Sure, what does it mean? You know, practically, what does it mean if ISIS shows up in your town?
Right.
Well, you know, and this goes back to solving the root of the problem. Islam is what it has always been. It's a theocracy. It is a political system folded into a theological perspective. I mean, it's a pale imitation of both Christianity and Judaism. And it has been used, and it was used from its very inception, as a means by which to establish. It's a dynastic faith. That is, the major split within Islam between Sunni and Shia resulted in the split within Muhammad's own followers when he died. The question was, since this is a dynasty, who takes over now? And that picture was not clear, and there were two rivals to the rulership called the Caliphate. And they have been at each other ever since. So when they show up, one of the first things that they do is install themselves in all of the offices of political power, because Islam, as it operates out in the world, operates as a theocratic system. And that means then the shutting down of anything, any expression of faith that's outside of Sunni Islam.
Yeah.
Now, this is not unique.
They would burn churches, of course.
Or... Yeah, this is not unique to the Middle East. We tried this once in the West, and it was called Henry VIII, and it was a catastrophe. That, you know, when he declared himself both the head of the state and the church, and if you worshipped in a different way, you were a traitor to the state, and you were to be run out, or you were to be killed, and many Catholics were.
I would add his daughter, Queen Elizabeth, the Virgin Queen, to that.
Yes.
She carried on in even worse way.
That martyrs list. And eventually the parliament of that country, you know, launched a sort of a pushback. There was a civil war in England. They killed the king. They cut the head off of Charles I. And they said to the monarchy, you know, okay, fine, you do this over here. You're the head of the church. You're the head of whatever you are. We're going to run the country. And that's how it's been ever since. And currently in Britain, if you decide to convert to anything but Anglicanism, you're removed from the line of succession on the royal throne. So this is, you know, but people say, well, you know, you're picking on the Middle East and Muslims and Arabs. No, we're not. We're picking on an ideological system that doesn't work. So when ISIS shows up, they shut down all expressions of faith that contradict Sunni Islam. They shut down all political systems and then take control. And within Sunni Islam, they have a legal system called Sharia law. It comes from, in part, the Quran and in part, teachings about the Quran called the Hadith.
The Hadith, right.
Yeah, and they impose that legal system. And within the framework of that legal system, non-Muslims receive a third-class citizenship status. They're not allowed the same rights. They have to pay a special, you know, a designated fee. They're not allowed to have places of worship. Even in countries, say, like Jordan, in which there's not this open persecution, there's still the shades of Sharia law. You're not allowed to make improvements on a church without government approval. You're not allowed to have a church that's taller than a mosque.
Yeah, let me stop you here for a second, because we're going to go to a little break, and I've seen quickly the book you put together called Displaced, huh?
Yes.
Very powerful pictures and commentary. I'd like to just ask you to summarize it for our listeners, if you can, and try to highlight some of the main points you're making. But let's take a little quick break. I'm Father Tom Coyce, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
We join our Chaldean Catholics in prayer to the Mother of God for peace in the Middle East. Mother of God, Virgin Mary, be for us a safeguard from all illnesses and hardships. Through the great love you have for Christ, ask and beseech him to be merciful to us, to give healing to our ailments, to console the downtrodden, to unite those who are scattered and to forgive us.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Hello, I'm William Neal of Project Fourth Stream. We will be performing a benefit concert with the church choir and guest soprano Josephine Stoppelberg on April 11th at 7:30 at St. Stanislaw Kostka Church in Chicago. We have entitled the concert Notris Voces, Out of Darkness into Light, because the music, quietly passionate and reflective, will explore the themes of darkness and illumination. Music is a blend of classical and jazz improvisation and has been inspired by the recently restored artifacts in the church's sanctuary of the Divine Mercy.
The Nostras Voces concert is a fundraiser for St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. The concert is Saturday evening, April 11th at 7:30. Tickets $25 for adults, $40 for families. That's adult parents with minor children. High school and college students, $10. Purchase tickets online by visiting sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyes sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. We're talking about one of the most important conflicts in the world today. Doesn't get nearly as much attention as it should be. We need to be praying about this constantly. Jeff Gardner is our guest with us today. He just came out with a book called Displaced. And Jeff, I'd like you to summarize it a bit. And then during the break, Tony and I came up with a tremendous solution that I'm dying to share with you. And I need you to assess this because I think it was the Holy Spirit just came right into this room right now and inspired
Perfect.
us.
Perfect. Yes.
But yeah, you have this wonderful book, Displaced.
Yes, thank you. Displaced, you can find we have it in electronic form and soon to be in print form, and you can find it at picturechristians.org. That's the website. And the purpose of the book, this is our second e-book, is to provide a humanizing connection to our us here to our brothers and sisters in Christ there.
Yeah.
You know, I started this project, the Picture Christians Project, back in the fall of 2013, and I had what I call a ham-fisted epiphany. I mean, it was just so obvious. I thought, you know, I had been writing as a journalist and working as an advisor to help Christians in Iraq for many years, and not only was the situation not getting better, it was getting demonstrably worse. It just kept getting worse. I said, okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
What is missing? Why, when I talk to people individually, there's this tremendous amount of concern and energy, but then out of that, within the collective, nothing happens. And I said, okay, there's something missing. I said, well, one of the things that I can identify that's missing is quite literally a picture. That we are extremely image-dependent in this particular time and place. I mean, it's not unique to us, but it is hyper-dependent. We are we have become what I call an iconic people. Not that we're iconic in ourselves. It sounds like perpetual selfie, but we are now so wholly dependent on the image as a communicative coin of the realm.
Well, we've regressed to the caveman.
We have in many ways.
The cavemen only used images.
And this is why Instagram has overtaken Twitter in terms of users and traffic. Mm. As a communication professional, and I'm doing a PhD in media and communication, and I do this all over the world for a living, I said, okay, look, the duck goes quack and the cow goes moo. This is just how the barnyard animals behave. What does that mean in terms of the things that we need to get done right now? And one of the things that I found is that images of Christians, something that's normal and relatable, were almost entirely lacking from the public sphere. Now, there were many images of the horrific, what I call horror porn.
Yeah.
That were reductive after the, you know, the bomb has gone off and capturing someone really almost voyeuring into their grief. And that sells great magazine covers. It sells news story on television.
Yeah.
It's very, very good for commerce, but it's very bad for people. Because I don't relate to you as a human being when I see you in this extreme state. Now, I can empathize, I can sympathize, but I don't know who you are. And after that event, where did you go? What's life like for you? What are you experiencing? What can I do for you after the bomb has gone off? What do you need now? And those images, there was a just an enormous void. So I launched the Picture Christians Project in the spring of 2014. I went to Jordan, I went to Amman, and I went to Zirka, which is the hometown of the founder of ISIS, Abu al-Zarqawi, nasty little place. And I sat down with Christian refugees who had been run out of Iraq, and I just said, you know, I wish I could take you out of here like that. I can't, but tell me your story. Who, you know, what happened? How did you get here? What's life like here? And I don't give a lot of direction as a photographer. I'm a professional photographer, except to say, now I need you to look right through this lens, because on the other side of it is the whole world, and they need to see you. They need to meet you. And so in Displaced, I sat down with the refugees, and the bureaucratic term is internally displaced person. And I said, you know, that term speaks volumes more than it knows, because what's going on with the theft and the terror and the murder and the brutalization of ISIS, there is an internal spiritual displacement that Assyrians are undergoing, that they have been knocked off of their center.
And I've
worked extensively in the developing world, and one of the things that you notice, one of the effects, is it makes it very, very difficult when you have this internal spiritual psychological displacement. It makes it very difficult to think beyond the immediate. Think beyond, is the rice cooking? Are the children warm? And that is absolutely fatal if you have to get out of a situation in which you've been made a refugee and start again somewhere else. If you can't think beyond the next 15 minutes, one day, a week, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Let's focus too on some of the philosophy and theology that's operating. You know, in some ways, people are going to say, "No, don't get into theology, don't get into philosophy." But if you miss some of these major issues, major points, major worldviews, or if you just are a kind of that isn't a part of the, like I'm sorry to say, but the way our president here in the United States now seems to just can't bring himself to think that it has something to do with Islam,
and right.
that it's a ugly form of it, if nothing else, and I think that word jihad is what we need to analyze and pick apart. Or even before that, too, one of your organizations is called Restore Nineveh Now or something like that, right?
Right, Restore Nineveh Now, correct.
Restore Nineveh Now. That's a website, right. I assume. And
Yes, RestoreNinevehNow.org. And the purpose of that initiative, it was launched by the American Mesopotamian Organization. I know there's a lot in the way of mouthfuls here today. I apologize, listeners. But the purpose of that global initiative, and I'm the director of media and communication, is to say, the long-term solution for this, while we need these short-term remedies, the long-term solution is a province for ethnic and religious minorities, Assyrians, who are the Christians in Iraq, the Yazidis.
A province, I never heard that, Jeff, before proposed. But
The Nineveh Plain province is, well, now what's interesting is within the context of Iraq, the politics there, back in 2014, in January, you know, they have a parliament. That's their political system. And before things go into parliament, there's a ruling body called the Council of Ministers. And they approve things to be debated in parliament.
We're talking about Iraq now.
Yeah, in Iraq. And the Council of Ministers in Iraq in January of 2014, recognizing the ongoing persecution of religious minorities, approved the establishment of a province called the Nineveh Plain Province. Now, unfortunately, ISIS has usurped those lands, those towns, and driven out the people in that region.
Is it big enough to hold?
Oh, absolutely.
All the people, or is it big?
Yeah, sure, sure, sure. And
it's not only big area. How big is it? Are we talking the state of New Jersey or Illinois or something? Or?
Yeah, something closer to on the order of say like a portion of Upper Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
The UP. I know that's one of the more obscure regions in the country.
Yeah.
For the obscure geographical.
Right. Nobody knows what you're talking about, Jeff, but we'll accept it.
Well, this is the north. Imagine the northwest portion of Iraq. And they said, look, that we need to have a much more pluralistic society than we do, and that means that we have people here who are very different in their belief system. The Sunnis are not the same as the Shia, are not the same as the Christians.
Yeah,
and it's not a bad thing. I mean, we can get along with each group, religious and ethnic group.
And don't forget the Jewish people.
And we're now working with Jewish organizations here in the United States. Absolutely, with each of these groups guiding their own future. I mean, that was the success to the experiment that became the United States. You know, Maryland was set up, named after the Blessed Mother, which was very different than Massachusetts or, say, Kentucky.
Yeah, that's part of it, no doubt.
And unfortunately, ISIS has terrorized and brutalized the land. So first things first, this criminal syndicate has to go. And as you pointed out, Father, there's just not the leadership that we need, and that's a failing of those that occupy our capital, and it's also a failing on our part. You know, we get the government that we vote for.
Yeah, yeah. The solution that Tony and I came up with has to tweak your idea a little bit.
Okay.
But it's it's going to be pull off. But if we could pull this off. The Providence, I've never thought of it. The idea, a Providence where Christians could be, live in peace, I guess you could say. But I want it to be in between Israel and I'd like it to be a buffer zone. so carve out some land just east of Israel and stick the Christians as a buffer zone between the two, and we'll buy 100 more years of,
you're not far from what it is that we're proposing. I think the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan might object to this carving out. because that would mean...
Well, Jordan has a lot of Christians.
And the King of Jordan has been very helpful. You know, he was educated here in the United States at the University of Texas. The people of Jordan, I can tell you from having traveled there, are not as welcoming to Christians. I think we're in the same chapter, just slightly different pages.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Nineveh Plain province is slightly north and east of
the Nineveh Plain. We got to get this. I really like this idea. I've never heard it proposed before, and it never even came to my mind. Why not try to? If the international community could put the pressure up, why not have a...
Well, and here's the good news again. You know, through Restore Nineveh Now, we're very active in Washington, D.C., and we're very active at the U.N. And last week, members from Restore Nineveh Now met with U.N. representatives from France, Great Britain, Russia, and the United States, and we gave them a memorandum that is, this is the problem, this is the solution. And the nation of France is taking those points from the memorandum and using them as their centerpiece for this week's meeting of the Security Council. France has called a meeting of the Security Council to address the issues with ISIS and religious minorities. And so they're, the UN goes at its own pace, but they are now looking and discussing what we have been advocating for some time.
It seems like a solution they could chew on. It's accepting. It's not calling one place superior, one religion superior over the other. Just say
no.
Let's just have our own space.
It's simply to recognize the very and this is and as our faith is, it's a it's an a very human issue. It's a fundamental rights issue. And you know, and I'm a Catholic convert. I grew up a Mormon, and to be honest about it, spent most of my life as an atheist, my young life.
Wow.
And then as I was doing my first graduate program, my master's and my PhD program in medieval history, became Christian, became Catholic. I was brought into the church by, you know, Thomas Aquinas and St. Francis. How's that for bipolar, I guess?
Companions.
That's the best way to come in.
Well, and I had the great grace, the great privilege to, you know, pray at St. Francis's tomb in the south, and in the north, sit down in Paris and read St. Thomas Aquinas in his own hand. Mm-hmm. In the Bible, he was a lefty. Horrific handwriting, just terrible.
isn't that some? Yeah, boy, we gotta hear that story too. And
but so I don't see that there's a separation between what is our faith and what ought to be going on in the world around us. And this is a human issue, and that is that all of us as human beings have the right to live peacefully with one another. And yes, and I think we should be competing on the field of ideas, and that is talking with our brothers and sisters everywhere about the gift that is the salvation of Jesus Christ. But that doesn't mean, see, I as a convert, many, many tried to convert me by cramming the tree of truth down my throat, and it didn't work. It didn't work. It was first clearing the rocks out of my mind, and then preparing the soil, and then planting the seed. My conversion, I would say, took about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to have a world in which we can live together and we can get along. And I've seen places in which Muslims and Christians live side by side, significantly in Africa. And you know, you have tensions wherever you have some very differing worldviews, and mm-hmm. Islam and Christianity are very different. But you can have a society in which there is an exchange and a cooperation and a coming and going of affairs that's peaceful.
If you don't take Takira, the principle of Takira, seriously, which unfortunately I think I want to come back to that. We're going to take another quick break here. A practical question that I want to ask you, too. I'm curious. I'm fascinated about this proposed providence, but I want to hear what you say. Practical question is, you know, will people move there? Will they be happy to move there? Can they do it? Can they develop it?
Yeah, we'll take that up after the break.
I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change broadcasts from the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, located two blocks north off Division on Noble at the Division Street exit off the Kennedy. Since 1867, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church has been serving the faithful of Chicagoland since 1867. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, can continue its mission to bring Christ to His people. Please donate now by going to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. And click on the donations link to make a secure donation with a major credit card or debit card. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, will continue its restoration and will continue to thrive for the body of Christ.
The Winds of Change
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Hello, I'm Father Thomas Loya of the Tabor Life Institute. I'm inviting you to an opportunity to be pierced by the sheer beauty of God's plan for your life, to make the connection between God, sex, and the meaning of life.
As Father Loya invites you to hear renowned speaker and author Christopher West, Saturday, April 25th at St. Mary Immaculate Parish in Plainfield, Illinois.
Original sin for all of us, for every human being on the planet, has disoriented our desires. We often find ourselves hungry for things that don't satisfy the ache, don't satisfy the need.
Join Christopher Saturday, April 25th from 6:30 till 9:30 p.m. at St. Mary Immaculate Parish, 15629 South Route 59, Plainfield, Illinois. Limited seating. Register online to coreseminar.evenbright.com. Core spelled C-O-R, Bright spelled B-R-I-T-E.
Welcome back, everyone. Great announcements there. I want to get to Father Loya's parish for that interesting seminar with Christopher West. Yeah, I left before the break. I threw out the question. You've given me some hope, Jeff, if that's kind of hard to do with that situation in the Middle East. But you're giving me some hope because it's a very practical, simple idea in a certain sense. Establish a providence where Christians will be protected. You could put a big wall around it if necessary. We're going back to the ancient times, you know, cities with walls on. But short of that, if you had a good enough military force to protect, you could do it, I suppose.
Right.
Would people move there?
Well, yes, they would. And there are people there now within Iraq and around the region. That is Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, not so much Syria now because so many have fled. There are about 1.8 million displaced Assyrian Christians. And they don't want to go to another country. And unfortunately for them, other countries aren't taking them. You know, I have worked and advocated on their behalf with other countries, Australia and Sweden and Ireland, and I hear the same thing over and over when I speak with the offices in these countries. They say, look, you know, we're overwhelmed. We're not processing any new batches of applications for 3 to 5 years. Well, let's say that you're a Syrian Christian. You had to run for your life. You've had everything stolen from you, and you're now living as a refugee in Jordan.
Yeah, just a point of clarification, Jeff, that you're saying Assyrian Christians, but that doesn't mean you're from Syria.
No, not.
Because Syria is a different country.
Right, no, not Syria, Assyrian.
Assyrian.
That is the ancient people from Nineveh who converted, to the faith at the hands of Thomas the Apostle.
Mm-hmm.
The Assyrians. Yeah, and that's thank you for that clarification.
It's a little confusing.
Assyrian and Assyrian. These are ethnically the people that have embraced the Christian faith in Iraq.
Yeah.
So let's say that you're an Assyrian Christian and you're now a refugee in Jordan. Under the laws that govern you as a refugee, you're not allowed to work. Under the laws that govern you as a refugee, your children are not enrolled in the state schools.
Mm-hmm.
You've had all your livelihood has been taken from you. Maybe you were a shop owner and they firebombed it. Maybe you were a farmer and they stole all your equipment.
Yeah.
You're now living in the ghetto in Amman, Jordan. What are you going to do for 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. Have you talked to Pope Francis lately? It would seem like he might be able to help. This is a major project you're talking about here.
Restore Nineveh Now is a major organization and operation. We have representatives and groups we're working with in many countries, including, especially in Iraq. We have.
Wouldn't it be great if Pope Francis came and said this idea of establishing a providence, the Nineveh providence for Christians?
Well, he has said that. He's saying that Christians, Assyrians in Iraq, must have a place where they can be left to worship in peace.
Yeah.
And so as part of that picture, one of the things that Restore Nineveh Now, one of the parts of the picture that Restore Nineveh Now is doing, is we have organized and continue to fund a defense force called the NPU, the Nineveh Plain Protection Unit,
mm-hmm.
and it's made up at present of Assyrian Christian young men who have volunteered. We have plans to also have Yazidis who have been terribly persecuted by ISIS serve. And this group, this defense force, I spent time with them when I was in Iraq in January and February at their training camp, training with them and out in the morning and eating with them and talking with these young men. And the purpose of this force is to do two things. First, to guard towns that are still places where Christians have found safe havens, that ISIS didn't get all of the towns and villages,
mm-hmm.
but they are still an expanding menace. ISIS has tapped out soldiers in the regions that it's already in, and it's now highly dependent upon foreign fighters coming in and joining the movement. And the way they attract people is by expansive actions, and that's why, for instance, they choreographed that hideous, macabre video and the beheading of the 21 Egyptian Christians on the shores of Libya.
Right.
That's why they're making an alliance with Boko Haram. That's why they're supplying fighters in Yemen with arms and money.
Yeah.
They're saying to the jihadist world, we're expansive, we're still on the move, come join us.
Join us, yeah. So, you know what'll happen? I hate to be this kind of a prophet of doom in a sense. If a Nineveh providence could be established, what will happen is that area will be more prosperous, more beautiful, less violent, and then they'll want to come and take that over.
You know? Well, and we're not operating under any illusions that it's not going to be contested and it won't be something that has to be defended once established, and that's why we're training the NPU now. That's why we're providing professional. We're paying for professional trainers from the United States. To take that first, we had a group of 500 men go through what amounts to basic training, and now from that 500, we've arranged for training to create an officer corps, to create a policing unit, which is different. Policing is different than soldiering.
Yeah.
And the function of which is going to be to, first of all, maintain security in cities in which Christians are still living and taking refuge, and then to be the force that secures the province. So this is not something that is going to be fixed overnight. Would that it were so.
Yeah.
You know, that it please. But it's something that we're planning for as a long-term strategy. And people can find out about this. They go to restoreninevenow.org. Yeah. In fact, they can order one of the patches that the NPU trainees wear on their sleeves as they undergo this, as sort of a, you know, solidarity. This is who these guys are, and this is what they're doing.
I see that you're taking a group there in October, too. They can go with you on a pilgrimage.
We are. Now, we're not going to go to Iraq, which would be an interesting pilgrimage, but I don't think there are any companies operating there. We are taking people, a group, to the Holy Land, October 18th through the 28th. And I'll have information about that. We've just put it into place. So, but go to picturechristians.org, and if you're interested in the pilgrimage, you know, the information coming very soon, within minutes, as of this broadcast.
Yeah.
But we're going to take people through the Holy Land, and then this is a completely unique opportunity. We're going to go to Jordan, and we're going to sit down with our brothers and sisters in Christ who have been made refugees by ISIS. And we're going to break bread, we're going to laugh, we're going to cry, we're going to talk with one another, we're going to connect, you know, face to face, hand to hand, and say, you know, I know you're here, I don't want you to think that you're forgotten, I know that you know, the countries that we come from are, they seem to be
far away,
you know, missing in action, you know, where did you go, because this is what I hear from the refugees when I'm there, but don't despair. We are working. We are praying. We are here in solidarity with you. So if you want to find out what really goes on when Christians have to face up to ISIS and what happens, come with us this October 18th through the 28th to the Holy Land into Jordan, and we'll be traveling with Father Thomas Loya.
Mm-hmm.
And you will. This is a completely unique experience, by the way, of pilgrimages to the Holy Land.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I threw out the thing that when I'm looking for talking points, and I fantasize about what I can do here in Chicago area, or my parish is out in the Southwest, not far from Father Loya, actually, in Lamont, and there's quite a few. I fantasize about what I can do as a priest, as a pastor, with the Muslim population around me. I have little to no contact with any. But I'm afraid to open almost any kind of dialogue because of this darn principle of Takira, that you can lie to advance Islam.
Right.
How do you get beyond? How do you start? I'm throwing this out to you as a, you know, it's like a riddle without, it's an enigma wrapped up in a a mystery. But how
do you start that?
How do you start a dialogue when one group believes you can lie?
Well, you know, I'm reminded often of, a policy that we heard articulated throughout the 1980s in this country, a trust but verify.
Yeah.
And that's how I operate. Now, when I travel in the Middle East and I travel in Iraq, I'll be very blunt. I do not travel with guides who are not Christian. I don't travel with guards who are not Christian. And I usually, my children ask me, do you carry a gun? This is sort of big Indiana Jones like stuff, hauling cameras around. And I said, actually, I don't carry a gun because the honest truth of it is I can't work a camera and a rifle at the same time.
You need someone to help you.
So I have armed guards that travel with us and travel with me, and I don't travel with them if they're not Christian. I don't, I don't check their identity card or something.
Something else.
But the reason I do that is because one of the problems that you have and one of the problems we've had as a nation and individuals have is that, yes, within Islam there is this principle that you can lie to advance the faith and, may God rest his soul, individuals like James Foley, the Catholic American journalist who was killed by ISIS.
Beheaded her.
Unfortunately, he was had. His fate was sealed even before he got to Syria. When he made arrangements in Istanbul with a person to be his guide, it's called the fixer, with a person to be his fixer, he didn't know that the people that he was talking to were in cahoots with ISIS and were going to sell him.
Yeah.
And they did.
Right from the get-go.
And that's what became of him. Yeah. So
let's take a quick. Let's
take the region. You just have to be very careful.
Yeah, let's take our final break here. The hour goes by so fast. But as we conclude, I'm interested in some talking points you could share with us, and also, I see a scary connection between what we're saying here about Takira and what I see in some just our American political left kind of. Operatives. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers, and we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, WindsOfChangeShow.com. That's WindsOfChangeShow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link. Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at WindsOfChangeShow.com.
Hello, I'm William Neal of Project Fourth Stream. We will be performing a benefit concert with the church choir and guest soprano Josephine Stoppelberg on April 11th at 7:30 at St. Stanislaw Kostka Church in Chicago. We have entitled the concert Notris Voces, Out of Darkness into Light, because the music, quietly passionate and reflective, will explore the themes of darkness and illumination. Our music is a blend of classical and jazz improvisation and has been inspired by the recently restored artifacts in the Church's Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy.
The Nostras Voces Concert is a fundraiser for St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish, located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. The concert is Saturday evening, April 11th at 7:30. Tickets $25 for adults, $40 for families. That's adult parents with minor children. High school and college students, $10. Purchase tickets online by visiting sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org.
Hey, welcome back, Father Tom Coy. We just have a few more minutes here with our guest, Jeff Gardner of Restore Nineveh Now, author of a very interesting short book, a beautiful book with many pictures, e-book now, called Displaced. You can get it at Christian Pictures or Picture Christians.
PictureChristians.org.
PictureChristians.org, yeah.
Right.
There's a beautiful one I'm staring at, looking at right in front of me, the Wendy, a little girl of about 8 years old, just sitting there, smiling away, and just as innocent. Well, of course, pictures tell a thousand words, but there's a lot behind that you don't know. The issue that I'm trying to drive home is, number one, I've been adding in my petitions at Mass a petition that Islam start a reformation. Sounds kind of crazy, you know, and I don't know that there's many who's hearing it, but I if that doesn't happen, we're lost in a certain sense. So there has to be an effort for reform. And part of that reform is to discuss or to augment or change the principle of Takira.
Right.
That you can lie in order, you know, in a certain sense, it's a universal, every soldier who's in war realizes sometimes you got to lie to the enemy to get out of trouble or to win the book. It's a worldview of war. What is your, is being next to somebody who is not your religion, that doesn't qualify as a, you're not in a state of war. There's a kind of a creation, their sense of the state, that war is perpetual, I guess is what I want to say. If you're going to just use that principle, you can lie to advance Islam.
Right. Well, it's not as crazy as you might think, Father. Back on New Year's Day this year, the president of Egypt, President al-Sisi, gave a speech at Cairo's leading university, al-Zahar University. And in his speech, he said that there must be an Islamic revolution of thought, specifically one would address the glaring problems.
I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah, as how, you know, the gap between the texts of Islam and how it is that we antagonize the entire world. And he said, look, it just cannot be that we, that 1.6 billion people, want to kill the rest of the world's inhabitants. He said, I just don't see this in our faith.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that 1.6 want to lie, war, and murder the other 7 billion. He said, this, you know, and in a sense what he's saying, we have a massive PR problem, people.
Yeah.
And this is not the faith that I live and understand, and we must fix it. And
but he's
a very, very brave thing.
It was a brave thing, as well as the Prime Minister of France came out strong, kind of in defense of Israel, trying to defend its little existence. There's a few brave voices, but not enough. And another connection that before we run out of time here, I just want to share with the listeners, I see this a frustrating principle at operating, namely Takira, but I see it becoming more and more infected in our own culture. I can't help but be reminded of the craziness of Ferguson, where the hands up, don't shoot was really just a lie, but it was a lie to advance a cause. And we're borrowing from it. That music means we're at the end of our line. Jeff, I really appreciate this hour. I know our listeners did too. You've been listening. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.